Culture File spent the end of the summer at the End of the Road Festival this year, and over the next few nights we're going to bring you some of the conversation we recorded in various fields in Dorset, as well as a banquet of bands, hardcore to classical, more of which later in the week. One of the festival's special draws was its film programmes, with a day of movies curated by Martin McDonagh and another by Mark Jenkin, director of the BAFTA award-winning Fishing Tale Bait and one-man Cornish film industry. Jenkin also performed at the festival as 50% of the Cornish sound unit, creating a live soundtrack to his beautifully handmade and deeply unsettling film, Ennismain. Culturefile spoke to Jenkin and collaborator Dion Starr about sound and image and a Cornish philosophy of film.
My name's Mark Jenkin, and I'm the writer and director of Ennismain and also one half of the Cornish sound unit.
And I'm the other half, and my name's Dion Starr.
We're here to perform a reimagined score for my film Ennismain, which I originally created the score for, composed and performed the score, which is on the version of the film that went out in cinemas and is available on all streamers and BFI Blu-ray and DVD. And we decided to... me and Dion had talked about doing something musically for a while, and we decided that we would formalise it by reimagining the score and doing a few live dates with the film.
Are you lonely?
Not really.
How's the work?
Fine. That's why I'm here.
Gweno did it for my previous film, Bait. And kind of changed the whole film really by changing the score. So I was really keen this time to do it myself, but I knew I couldn't do it on my own. I needed Dion. So we sort of formalized our musical relationship and formed the Cornish Sound Unit. And this is the second time we performed it. We performed it on May Day at the BFI South Bank, which we thought then was a big venue, but having seen the Big Top now,
it's an approach that makes a lot of sense with your films, like more than with another film, because you have quite a big split between sound and picture already in your process.
Yeah, I think I like to do as much as the creative work as I can, not because I'm necessarily a control freak or anything, I just really enjoy it. So when I was making the film, the sound and the picture production is separated. You know, I shoot the images with my collaborators, the actors, production designers, everybody like that, and then I don't do any sound work during the shoot. That's all done afterwards. So the film, when it's first cut, doesn't have any sound. I add all of that on. So to do that again in this new context is kind of easy. You know, you kind of scrap a lot of the sound and kind of start again. And I get to collaborate this time. So on the score that I did for the film before, that's just me. And that's great, I really enjoy that. But also, I don't want to do that again. I don't want to reimagine it myself. So like, Dion had a huge amount of input in terms of the reimagining of it. So wrote quite a lot of the new score. And obviously we perform it together, but doing two different distinct bits in terms of content, but also formally as well. Because I work with analog tape, and you're kind of working with analog tape and a digital and analog modular synthesizer, right?
Yeah, combination of all three of those things. Yeah, some not quarter inch tape, but cassette tape on cassette loops, and then playing the cassette recorder as an instrument as well, along with modular synth, which we're sort of largely doing improvised work with that.
We've never played it the same time. The same way twice. You know, we tend to rehearse on Fridays at my studio down in Newlyn in the far west of Cornwall. So it's not a sound studio, it's my sort of production studio, but we kind of set up every Friday with all the kit to play with the audio. We may play through the film once in the morning and again in the afternoon. And some bits, like the simple melody bits that I play, will sound the same in the morning and in the afternoon, but I think other bits that we played as a crescendo at the end of the film that we have never played anywhere near the same twice.
You got something to say, Martin?
Just said it, brother.
What about you?
I'm fishing.
You use this technique in Bait as well, where the sound is something quite separate. Where does that come from? I mean, I think like a lot of Italian cinema is made that way or was made that way. It gives a very different feel when you're doing it to when an Italian filmmaker does it. It's like it's different in De Sica.
Yeah, I think I'm probably just not as good as getting it perfect. I remember the first time I did it on Bait, there was a review that came out that said Jenkin employs this slightly out of sync dialogue approach, which is a level of abstraction. And I read it, and it was written as a compliment, but I read it as slightly out of sync. Come on, mate, I'm doing my absolute best to get it in sync, but I'm using very simple equipment. But I think, especially when you're working on quite small films, independent films, the audio is not only where a lot of films fall down, but it's a lot of a lot of people ignore the creative possibilities of what you do with the audio. And on a really pragmatic basis, the audio is so much cheaper to create than the pictures. When you're creating the sound afterwards in a controlled environment, you can take as much time as you want. It's normally just me. Again, like I said before, I love the creative possibilities of sound, so it pains me to hand that away to somebody else. So on the shoot, I couldn't direct and shoot a film and also be recording the sound. I'd have to give that job to somebody else. I don't want somebody else to have that job because I like that job.
I mean, one of the things I thought about the slightly out of sync was that it gives Bait anyway, a kind of, you know, because it doesn't have it from elsewhere, it gives it a horror movie feel. So you get a lot of kind of meaning from the era, as it were.
Yeah, I think I'd like films that are a bit untrustworthy formally, not necessarily content or narrative. And a lot of people said that Bait felt a bit like a horror film. That's not the content, because if you read the screenplay for Bait, it's melodrama, it's almost soap opera. It's almost like an hour and a half long episode of EastEnders in terms of story and melodrama. But the form is kind of untrustworthy. Yeah, it's slightly otherworldly. Part of that is because it's black and white, and black and white has got a built-in level of abstraction, because obviously we see the world in colour, so as soon as you see a film that's black and white, there's a slight abstraction already. But the big abstraction comes from the sound. It's like, you know, are we watching reality, or are we watching a dream, or are we watching something? There's something not quite right. I like films that are kind of, you know, that can unnerve the audience and unsettle the audience, and the best way to do that is through sound.
Do you like it here on your own?
So in Ennis, Maine, every clock that is heard ticking in the film is ticking at a slightly irregular speed. It's either slightly too fast or slightly too slow.
I'm not on my own.
And it's not noticeable that the audience can go, oh, there's a clock that's ticking too fast or too slow. But you know something is slightly off. As an audience member, you're just a bit unnerved by it. So I think all of that, by doing the sound afterwards, it gives me the chance to consider all of those things that maybe I wouldn't consider if I was recording the sound on location.
Mark Jenkin there, and you also heard from Dion Starr, the other half of the Cornish Sound Unit. More from that conversation next time on Culture File.